She's not looking for love, she's hunting for victims. On the surface, she's just another gorgeous face on a dating app. But behind the swipe, she's a ruthless manipulator who lures men into dangerous traps, robs them blind, and posts the aftermath for clout. But when she's recruited by a secret network to take down a powerful tech mogul, the game changes. Seduction becomes strategy. Lies become weapons. And this time, the hunter walks into a trap of her own. In a world where trust is currency and betrayal is art, can she bring down the empire? Or will she become its next casualty? Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Swipe Left to Die. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Bio Trap. They say hell is empty, and all the devils are on dating apps. I believe it. I've danced with enough of them to know their rhythms by heart. Their lies, their lust, their desperate hunger for validation. They think they're predators, but that's only because they haven't met me. My name's not Cassandra, but that's the alias I wear like a second skin. Like armor. On Swipe Zone, I'm 28. In real life, none of your fucking business. Let's just say I've lived enough to know that men aren't looking for a woman. They're looking for a reflection of their own bullshit. So I give it to them. I become what they crave, what they think they need, what they'll open their wallets, their hearts, and sometimes their goddamn souls for. Swipe Zone is a fucking buffet of broken egos dressed up in gym selfies, fishing pics, and tired-ass motivational quotes. The app lets them swipe through women like items on Amazon Prime. Two-day delivery and zero emotional accountability. But I'm not a product. I'm the scam in their shopping cart. And tonight, I'm feeling extra vicious. It started the same way it always does. Dim lighting, my phone screen glowing in my hand like some cursed artifact, and the soft hum of lo-fi beats to keep me in that calculated headspace. The profile pic I use is one I crafted with surgical precision, a hotel mirror selfie, showing off the curve of my hips just enough to ignite their reptile brains, with a slight smirk that says, "I'll ruin your life and make you thank me for it." My bio is a landmine, sapiosexual. I like my men emotionally unavailable and rich. If you cry after sex, don't bother. It weeds out the weak and invites the overcompensating. The ones who need to prove something. The ones who think they're the exception. And Nolan? Nolan bit the bait like a starving fish. His profile screamed tryhard alpha, CEO of a disruptive tech startup. Pictures of him shaking hands with dudes in suits, posing next to luxury cars he probably leased, and of course, lifting weights shirtless in a mirror smeared with protein powder fingerprints. His bio. Get this. If you can't handle ambition, you're not woman enough for me. I don't chase. I attract. Jesus Christ. I almost felt bad. Almost. We exchanged 5 messages, just enough to make him feel like he was in control. I threw in a few sarcastic quips, praised his drive, and hinted at something naughty but classy. That was all it took. He was salivating through the screen. I'll pick the place, I told him. The wreck downtown. 9 p.m. Dress sharp. Or don't come. He answered in less than a minute. You got it, Queen Fire. They always think they're the hunter. But the trap was already set. I dressed for the kill. Tight red dress, plunging neckline, no panties. Not because I wanted to fuck him, but because the absence of them made me feel invincible. Like I owned the night. I painted my lips blood red, lined my eyes with precision, and slipped my favorite weapon, a matte black stun gun, into my purse like a sacred ritual. I took the long route to the wreck. I like to walk before a job, get into character. Smell the night air. Remind myself who the fuck I am. The city was buzzing, drunk laughter, distant sirens, the usual Saturday night chaos. But I moved through it like a ghost. Controlled. Composed. Electric. The wreck was a dive bar pretending to be upscale. Edison bulbs, exposed brick, overpriced drinks, and a jukebox that hasn't worked since COVID. I spotted him before he saw me, tall, clean-cut, cologne choking the air around him, wearing some designer shirt probably bought for the gram. He was already sipping something amber in a whiskey glass, staring at the entrance like a nervous prom date. I made a loop around the bar first, just to watch him watch me. His eyes locked in like a predator spotting prey. But predators don't know when they're prey. That's the delicious part. Cassandra, he asked when I finally approached. I smiled like a blade. Disappointed? No, hell no, he stammered. You look even better than your pictures. Of course I do, I said, sitting without invitation. He laughed, nervous. Most of them do. I ordered a drink I had no intention of finishing. Let him pay. Let him feel like the man. He talked. And talked. And fucking talked. Crypto, passive income, the metaverse, how he almost bought Ethereum in 2015. His voice was smooth but soulless. I nodded, sipped, let him ramble. I watched the way he checked his phone when it buzzed. The way his eyes flinched every time I leaned in. His hands were manicured. His teeth bleached. But he had no fucking clue what was coming. After 45 minutes of his elevator pitch disguised as a personality, I leaned forward and whispered, "You want to get out of here?" He blinked like he'd been struck by lightning. "Yes. Yes, definitely." I told him to drive, directed him to an abandoned textile mill on the edge of the industrial district. He hesitated when we passed the last functioning streetlight, but I placed a hand on his thigh and whispered, "You'll like this spot. It's private. Men are so easy when you speak their language." The building was a corpse of its former self, broken windows, graffiti-stained brick, fences bent like twisted ribs. I told him to park in the back alley where the cameras didn't reach. The streetlights were long dead. It smelled like rust and piss. "This feels kind of sketchy," he said, glancing around. "You scared?" I teased, sliding my hand up his leg. He laughed, but it was hollow. I climbed into his lap and straddled him in the driver's seat. His breathing hitched. His hands found my waist. He kissed like he was trying to prove something, like approval was more important than pleasure. Typical. I kissed back, slow, deep, letting him sink into the illusion. His hands slid under my dress. That's when I reached into my purse. One sharp click. One burst of voltage. BZZZZT. He spasmed like a puppet with its strings cut. I shoved him back into the passenger seat, opened the door, and dumped him onto the cold concrete like trash. He moaned softly, still twitching. Not enough to fight back, but just enough to know he was conscious. "Shoo," I whispered. "You'll be fine. Eventually." I rifled through his pockets, wallet, phone, keys, Rolex. Even his belt looked expensive. I grabbed it all. Slid his pants halfway down, took a quick snapshot on my burner phone, making sure his face was visible. Caption time. Another one bites the dust kiss mark hashtag swipe left to die hashtag dick and gone. Within minutes, the photo was trending on a dark clout chasing account I ran anonymously. My DMs lit up with laughing emojis, fire reacts, and comments from thirsty wannabes begging to be next. I didn't do this for the money. Sure, the cash was nice, and the tech gear I flipped on the black market kept me comfortable. But that wasn't the high. The real fix? The look on their faces when they realized they weren't the hunter. That they never were. That I saw through every mask, every performance, every pathetic attempt at dominance. I left Nolan there with his pants down and his pride in pieces. As I walked away, heels clicking softly against the pavement, I didn't look back. Because in my world, there are only two kinds of men. Those who swipe right, and those who pay the price. Chapter 2, Blood in the Algorithm. There's something sacred about silence after the storm. The kind of silence that hums in your ears and wraps itself around your bones. It's not peace, no. It's power. The kind you only feel when you've taken something. Stripped someone of their pride. Their illusion. Their safety. That night, walking away from Nolan and his twitching, half-naked body splayed out beside a dumpster like a discarded sex doll, I felt electric. No guilt. No remorse. Just that high. That heady rush of dominance, of control. It buzzed through me like adrenaline wrapped in silk. You don't come down from that easily. It sticks to you. Makes everything else feel dull. I took the long route back to my apartment, weaving through alleyways and quiet streets, heels echoing against the pavement like a metronome. A beat for my own twisted symphony. The city was still wide awake. Sirens howling in the distance, neon signs blinking through dirty windows, rats scurrying through gutters. But none of it touched me. I was untouchable. My building was tucked between a closed-down pawn shop and a 24-hour bail bonds office. Perfectly anonymous. I rented the top-floor unit under a fake name, paid in cash, no digital footprint. A safe haven built on lies. Inside, it smelled like lavender and cigarette smoke. An odd combo, I know, but it keeps me grounded. Reminds me I'm two women. The predator and the performance. Cassandra and whatever's left underneath. I locked the door, drew the blinds, and dropped Nolan's loot onto the coffee table like a kid dumping Halloween candy. Wallet fat. Black Amex. Couple of business cards from names I Googled later. VCs, angel investors, tech bros from the same incestuous circle. Rolex? Real. Phone. Unlocked, because of course it was. Dumbass. I spent an hour scrolling through his photos and messages, laughing at how easily he gave himself away. Dick pics, thirst traps, motivational quotes over sunsets. God, men are so predictable it's almost boring. Almost. I wiped the phone clean, reset it, and added it to the stash. I've got a drawer full of them. One day, I might build a little museum, a monument to male stupidity. But something else happened that night. Something new. After I posted the pic of Nolan's limp, humiliated body, I got a message. Not in my DMs, those were flooded as usual, but on Signal. The encrypted line I used only for buyers and clients who knew how to play dirty. It wasn't someone I recognized. No username, just a burner account, and a message that simply said, "Nice work. I've been watching you. You want bigger?" At first, I thought it was a troll. Some horny dude trying to get off on the fantasy of my heists. I was about to block the number, but curiosity pulled my finger back from the screen. Something about the timing, the tone, the confidence. It felt different, like someone who really knew me. I responded, "Define bigger." The typing bubbles popped up immediately. High value targets. Real money. But you'd need to level up. And trust someone. I stared at the screen. The word trust made my skin crawl. It's not in my vocabulary. Trust is for people who want to be betrayed, who need to feel loved before they're abandoned. I don't trust. I manipulate. I pretend. I survive. Still, high value targets? I typed. "I don't do partners." He replied. "Then keep playing with boys like Nolan." That hit different. Not because he was wrong, but because he wasn't. I closed the app, threw my phone across the couch, poured myself a glass of cheap red wine and sat on the floor, letting the bitterness bite my tongue. The truth is, I'd been feeling it. The repetition. The cycle. Lure. Tease. Humiliate. Rob. Post. Vanish. Rinse. Repeat. Sure, the humiliation videos brought in likes and the occasional crypto tip from pervy fans. But the thrill? It had started to fade. I was circling the same drain. No new challenge. No higher stakes. But this offer? It unsettled me. I went to bed with a blade under my pillow and dreams full of static. Faces of men I'd broken flashing like glitches. Nolan. Travis. Caleb. Eric. Their names were a blur now. I stopped counting after 20. Maybe 30. They all bled together in the end. I woke up at noon the next day, groggy, hungry, and still thinking about that message. I told myself I wouldn't respond. I don't work with shadows I can't see. But temptation's a tricky bitch. She doesn't whisper in your ear. She drips down your spine like hot wax until you have to scratch the itch. By sunset, I was back online. New profile. Different photos. New alias. This time, I went full influencer. A beach pic, a brunch selfie, and a fake modeling tagline. I matched with 10 guys in the first hour. Boring, all of them. Too eager. Too stupid. And then, there was Dominic. Older. Late 30s. Salt and pepper beard. Clean suit. No cheesy quotes. No shirtless pics. Just a bio that read, "I don't chase. I watch." That chilled me. I swiped right. Match. He messaged first. Just one word. Finally. What the fuck did that mean? I played it cool. Responded with a smirk emoji and, "Have we met before?" His reply came instantly. "Not yet. But I've been waiting." He sent me a time and location. No small talk, no preamble. A penthouse lounge uptown. Not my usual scene. Too upscale. Too exposed. I hesitated. Every instinct told me this was a trap. But another voice, deeper, darker, whispered, "Or maybe it's your next evolution." So I said fuck it. I dressed in black this time. Classy. Dangerous. A silk blouse, leather skirt, and heels that could kill a man if aimed right. I slid the taser into my thigh holster. Just in case. The penthouse bar was pure decadence. Crystal chandeliers, jazz floating through the air like smoke, marble counters, and men in suits trying too hard to seem powerful. But Dominic stood out. Not because he was loud, but because he wasn't. He was leaning against the balcony rail, drink in hand, eyes locked on the skyline like it owed him something. When he saw me, he didn't smile. Didn't blink. Just nodded once, like he'd been expecting me for years. "You're late," he said as I approached. I raised an eyebrow. "You didn't give me a time." "Exactly. What the fuck was this?" I sat. He poured me a drink from his bottle. Glenfiddich. The expensive kind. No words for a full minute. Just silence and tension thick enough to cut with a steak knife. Then he said it. "I know what you do, Cassandra. Or whatever your real name is. I've been watching. tracking your posts, your patterns, the way you lure, strike, and disappear. It's elegant. I didn't move, didn't flinch, but my fingers curled tightly around the glass. He leaned in. You've got a gift, but you're playing in puddles. I can give you oceans. What do you want? I asked flatly. He smiled. To feed your hunger, and to watch you become what you were always meant to be. That was the moment I realized I wasn't being hunted. I was being recruited. Chapter 3, The Devil's Business Card. Dominic didn't blink when he said the words. I want to feed your hunger. And in that moment, I felt like I'd been cracked open, like he saw something inside me I didn't give him permission to look at. I don't like that feeling. I'd built my entire life on being unreadable, untouchable. A woman wrapped in razor wire and perfume, all beauty and no access. I speak in masks, smile in daggers. I lure with softness, only to kill with the fall. But Dominic, he looked at me like he could see through it all. And worse, like he fucking enjoyed it. You think you know me? I asked, steadying my voice behind the rim of my glass. He leaned back against the velvet bar stool, his fingers drumming softly against the crystal tumbler. No rush. No threat. Just that insufferable, calculated calm that screamed power. I know your patterns, he said. And I know you're getting bored. You wouldn't be here if you weren't. That hit a nerve. I hated him for being right. I hated myself more for not walking away. But curiosity was a drug, and I was halfway strung out. So what? You want to be my pimp? My boss? A fanboy who thinks he's clever? I hissed. He chuckled low and slow. I'm not here to control you. I'm here to evolve you. He slid a sleek black card across the bar. It was matte, unmarked, except for a QR code and a single name embossed in silver foil. Eidolon. No number. No email. No bullshit. Just that one word, heavy with mystery. What the hell is this? I asked, suspicious. Scan it, he said. Or burn it. Your call. I stared at the card. My instincts screamed don't touch it. But the itch under my skin, the one that only rises when something forbidden stands in front of me, was already too loud to ignore. I pulled out a burner phone and scanned the code. A locked site. One question. What are you willing to do for complete freedom? And a blank line waiting for an answer. I stared at it, thumb hovering. The silence stretched between us like a loaded gun. I don't play cult games, I said finally, tossing the phone back into my clutch. It's not a cult, he said. It's a network. People like you. People who see the world for what it is. Manipulable. Broken. Desperate to be taken advantage of. We don't just rob. We architect collapse. The words hit me like a slow explosion. Not because they scared me, but because they thrilled me. I'd never had a name for what I did. Not really. People called it scamming. Seduction. Revenge. Trauma response. But this? Architect collapse? That was fucking poetry. And you want me to join your little league of emotional terrorists? I asked with a crooked smirk. Dominic leaned in again, close enough that I could smell the faintest hint of cedarwood and sin. I want to see what happens when you stop stealing from men and start breaking systems. My mouth went dry. Not from fear. From the possibilities. He stood without another word. Dropped a thick envelope beside the empty glass. For when you're ready, he said. But move fast. The window won't stay open. And just like that, he was gone. No number. No trace. Just his scent lingering like a ghost on my clothes, and a question burning in my head. What the fuck have I just been invited into? I didn't open the envelope that night. I couldn't. I needed space to think. To breathe. To ground myself in the old ritual. The one that reminded me of who I was before that penthouse bar flipped the axis of my reality. So I did what I always do when I'm spinning. I hunted. I logged back into Swipe Zone. Switched back to Cassandra, my warpaint persona. A sultry pic. A fire emoji. A new quote. Be careful who you fall for. Some flowers grow in graveyards. Within 15 minutes, I had a live one. Name: Drew. Occupation: venture capitalist. Bio: ambition is my love language. Location: Midtown. His messages came fast. Aggressive. Dominant. You know the type, self-declared alphas trying too hard to be steel when they're just tinfoil. I played soft. Flirty. Vulnerable. I let him think I was the kind of woman who wore vulnerability like silk, just begging to be wrapped around a powerful man's fingers. We agreed to meet at a rooftop bar, his choice. I wore a tight green dress this time. Sleek, dangerous, forest witch vibes. No wig. No fake accent. Just enough realness to make the lie taste sweeter. Drew was exactly what I expected. Rolex flashing, cologne choking the air, and a handshake that screamed, "Daddy never hugged me." He talked over dinner, told me about his ex who couldn't keep up, his business partner who didn't have the balls, and his therapist who was too soft. He didn't ask me a single question about myself. Perfect. After dessert, I told him I wanted to feel wild. He drove us out past the city limits to some private cabin he owned, said it was his escape from the chaos. We didn't even make it inside. I shoved him against the hood of his car, kissed him like I meant it, and pulled the taser from my clutch mid-moan. Bzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzzz cash. But this time, I didn't take a picture. I hesitated. I kept seeing Dominic's face in my head. His words. His fucking card. Stop stealing from men. Start breaking systems. I drove Drew's car back to the city, parked it 2 blocks from where he picked me up, and walked home in silence. I didn't post about him. Didn't brag. Didn't even smile. Something had shifted. I dumped the envelope on my bed and finally tore it open. Inside, a new phone, a stack of unmarked bills, a small USB, and a note, handwritten in clean block letters. Your first real job. You ready, Cassandra? Or are you just a ghost with good tits? No address. No instructions. Just the USB. I stared at it for a long time. My hands were shaking. Not from fear. From anticipation. Because deep down, I already knew the truth. I wasn't a con artist anymore. I wasn't just hunting men for fun. I was about to burn the whole fucking world down. And this time, the blood on the algorithm? It wouldn't be anonymous. Chapter 4, Ghost Protocol. I stared at the USB like it was alive. That tiny little stick sat in the center of my bed like a loaded gun. Sleek. Cold. Silent. But I could feel it pulsing. Like it was daring me to plug it in. Like it knew what it carried was going to change the way I moved in the world. I was never one to believe in fate. Fate was for people who sat around waiting for life to throw them a bone. I never waited. I hunted. I took. I destroyed. But right then, holding that USB between 2 fingers like a matchstick about to light the fuse, I realized I wasn't just playing anymore. I was being invited into something bigger than me. Something dangerous. And it scared the fuck out of me. Which ironically is why I said yes. I didn't open it in my apartment. Too risky. Paranoia was a survival instinct in my line of work, not a flaw. I grabbed the burner laptop from my decoy stash, slipped the USB into my bra, and headed to the edge of town where I knew a 24-hour laundromat with spotty Wi-Fi and cameras that hadn't worked in years. The place was exactly as I remembered it, flickering lights, vending machines full of expired snacks, and a single employee asleep behind the desk with a hoodie pulled over his face. Perfect. I slid into the back corner, dropped a quarter into an empty dryer just for the noise, then opened the laptop and plugged in the USB. No splash screen. No fancy animation. Just a single folder labeled. Idolan_1. Inside were 2 files, a.doc and a.jpg. I clicked the document first. What I saw made my stomach twist, not in fear but fascination. It was a dossier. Detailed. Professional. Government-level shit. Name: Marcellus Mark Vero. Occupation: founder and CEO of SageNet, a rapidly growing data mining company with contracts in 5 countries. Estimated net worth: $412 million. Scandals: 3 pending sexual misconduct allegations, 2 of which had been settled out of court. No convictions. Known habits: married with 2 kids, but uses dating apps under alias SageKing. Preferred type: late 20s, educated, submissive-leaning women. Location: operates primarily out of a private tech compound on the edge of River Lake. Heavy security. Discreet exit routes. No official address, classified as private estate. Underneath all that, a mission brief. Get close. Extract information. Humiliate. But do not kill. Ruin is the goal. Collapse him from the inside. Attached to the end of the file was a 3-word signature. Level 1 trial. I sat there, blinking at the screen. The implications settled in slowly. This wasn't just a target. This was a fucking demolition assignment. And I was the explosive. I opened the image file. It was him. Mark Vero. Rugged face. Cleft chin. Crooked smile. The kind of man who probably fucked his assistant on the conference table and still got applause from shareholders. He looked like money and smelled like corruption. The kind of man who got off on dominance, not just in the bedroom, but in boardrooms, in negotiations, in casual conversations with waiters. He didn't just want to win. He wanted everyone to know they lost. My favorite kind of prey. I sat back and lit a cigarette with shaking fingers. I hadn't smoked in years. Kicked the habit cold turkey when I started targeting high net worth men. They don't like the smell. But tonight, I needed the burn, the pull, the quiet rhythm of inhale and exhale while my brain went into blueprint mode. This was a different game. No more alleyway ambushes. No more tasers in Teslas. This was strategy, deep manipulation. This was about turning myself into something custom built to crawl under his skin and stay there. I had to become his weakness, and then use that weakness to rip him apart. Step one was research. I spent the next 48 hours submerged in his digital footprint. I used spoofed IPs and bounced through half a dozen VPNs as I combed through everything. His company bios, interviews, social media under both his name and his alias, Sage King. His wife, Lillian, ran a charity for young female entrepreneurs that was basically just a PR shield. His two daughters were tucked neatly into private school photos, smiling, photoshopped, carefully curated. He was meticulous, but not perfect. He had a pattern. Sage King's activity followed a rhythm. Weekday nights between 9 p.m. and 11:30 p.m. Always swiping. Always messaging. Never using video. Always inviting them to him. Never the other way around. That told me two things. He liked control, and he was hiding something at home. Which meant I had to give him the illusion of control while setting the trap under his fucking feet. I created a new persona. Name, Elise M. Age, 29. Occupation, freelance interior designer. Bio, empathic. Thoughtful. Quietly chaotic. I like my coffee black and my men emotionally unavailable. Photos, tastefully seductive. No nudity. Just enough curve to draw interest, and enough restraint to make it seem real. I even threw in a few deep quotes about healing and boundaries. The kind of shit narcissists love to hear because they think it means you'll fold under praise. He matched within 24 hours. His first message? Boundaries are meant to be tested. I rolled my eyes so hard I saw stars. Predictable prick. But I played the game. Responded with. Not if they're guarded by someone with sharper teeth. He replied instantly. Finally. A woman with fire. I could practically hear the smug in his voice. The conversations escalated fast. He wasn't into small talk. Wanted depth. Submission. Surrender, he called it. Said he didn't take control, he earned it. What he meant was, he liked to play mind games until his victims gave it up willingly. I gave him just enough resistance to keep him interested. Dropped hints of past trauma, trust issues, bad men. He ate it up like a starving wolf. I let him believe he was peeling me open, that every message he sent chipped away at my walls. Within a week, he invited me to his compound. He didn't call it that, of course. He called it a retreat. He said he had a chef, a spa room, wine imported from Sicily, and no pressure, just a night to breathe. I knew the kind of breathing he meant. I said yes. And in that moment, the hunt truly began. I prepped harder than I ever had. This wasn't just some corporate sleaze with a god complex. This was a fortified king in a digital castle. One wrong move and I'd end up in a hole in his backyard or worse, blacklisted by Eidolon before I even passed the test. I studied his known staff. Dug up purchase orders tied to SageNet for cleaning services, driver contracts, and catering invoices. Built a mental map of what to expect. I chose my outfit carefully, low-cut but not desperate, heels just high enough to give the illusion of submission. I braided my hair, wore no jewelry except for a small black choker. I packed a micro-recorder in my bra lining and kept a razor-thin switchblade inside my clutch. Because even in performance, I never walk in naked. His driver picked me up in a silver Mercedes with tinted windows and a bottle of champagne chilling in the console. We didn't speak. The ride was silent, tense, endless. The compound was nestled behind three security gates and more trees than I could count. The kind of place you couldn't scream your way out of. When I stepped out, I felt it in my bones. I wasn't just walking into a man's house. I was stepping into the belly of the beast. And I had one goal. Make him love me. Make him need me. Then burn his entire fucking kingdom to the ground. Chapter 5. Welcome to the cage. The first thing I noticed when the gates closed behind me was how quiet it got. No traffic. No sirens. No background hum of the city to remind me I could still run. Just trees, tall and suffocating, lining the property like obedient soldiers, guarding secrets no one would ever hear. The compound wasn't a house. It was a fucking fortress. A sleek, modern monster of glass and steel, tucked deep in the hills above Riverlake, isolated from the world by design. security cameras on every corner, windows so dark they looked like obsidian, and a driveway that wrapped in a perfect circle around a fountain shaped like a broken hourglass. Symbolism was always louder when men had too much money. Time didn't run out here. It shattered. The driver stepped out first. Didn't open the door for me, just waited. Silent, stiff, like he wasn't just driving cars but watching souls. I climbed out slow, keeping my face soft and composed, masking the buzz of electricity under my skin. My heels clicked softly against the stone path. I clutched my small clutch like it was nothing, like it wasn't hiding a blade sharp enough to gut a lie open. And then I saw him, Mark Vero, standing at the top of the stairs like a king in exile. Tailored black slacks, dark gray sweater, sleeves pushed up just enough to reveal strong forearms, and a thick silver watch that probably cost more than the average annual salary. He wasn't smiling. He didn't need to. His posture did all the talking, shoulders squared, chin lifted, arms casually folded like I was a scheduled delivery instead of a woman. "Welcome," he said. Just that. One word, flat and confident. "Nice place," I replied, adjusting my tone to match his, polished but not overly impressed. He studied me, eyes scanning slowly, not with hunger, but with assessment. Like he was reading data points. I knew that look. I used that look. But it was different seeing it turn back at me with surgical precision. I had to remind myself, you're not prey. You're the knife pretending to be soft skin. He offered a hand. I took it. His palm was warm, calloused, too firm for someone who probably hadn't done manual labor in decades. That told me everything. He needed control in every touch, dominance in every gesture. I filed that away. A good manipulator collects details like currency. He led me inside. The interior was colder than the outside. Modern minimalism soaked in money. White marble floors. Sharp edges. Soft lighting that never quite touched the corners. No personal touches. No photos. No clutter. The kind of home where nothing had ever really lived, just existed under careful curation. "Drink?" he asked, walking toward a bar tucked into the wall like a secret. "Red, if you've got it," I said. He poured two glasses of a vintage I didn't recognize, handed me one, and gestured to the velvet sofa that faced a black glass fireplace. I sat carefully, crossing my legs. I made sure my dress shifted just enough to show thigh, but not desperation. Mark took the chair across from me, didn't sit next to me. Smart. He was playing his own game. "Tell me something true," he said. I blinked. "Excuse me. Something real. No icebreakers. No flirty bullshit. Just truth." That caught me off guard. Not because I didn't have something, but because most men didn't ask for real. They just wanted the illusion of intimacy without the threat of it. So I gave him a lie that sounded real. "I haven't trusted a man since I was 19. He nodded slowly. "What happened? Does it matter?" He tilted his head. "Only if you want me to think you're complicated." I smirked. "I don't care what you think. I care how you act." He grinned, finally. "Good answer." The silence that followed wasn't awkward. It was deliberate. He wanted me to feel the space, to feel like I had to fill it. But I didn't. I let the silence stretch until it became mine. Until he finally broke it. "I like control," he said. "But not obedience. Obedience is easy. Control that's given, earned, that's different." "I like fire," I replied. "But not heat. Heat is temporary. Fire consumes." He raised his glass to that. I matched him. And the dance began. He gave me a tour. Bedroom, kitchen, wine cellar. Each room was a display of calculated wealth, minimalist, beautiful, but hollow. The bathroom had black marble floors and an antique tub that looked like it had never been touched. The bed was king-sized with crisp, white sheets tucked so tightly I could bounce a coin off them. "I like clean lines," he said. I didn't respond. But in my head I thought, clean lines hide dirty men. When we got to his study, the tone shifted. It wasn't a study. It was a fucking command center. Multiple monitors. Encrypted servers. Fingerprint scanners. Digital blueprints of tech systems I couldn't even name. This wasn't a tech CEO's office. It was a war room. And that's when I knew. Mark Vero wasn't just rich. He was powerful in ways that didn't show up on Forbes. He caught me staring. "Curious?" "A little," I said, stepping closer. "This is where the future is written," he said, gesturing at the monitors. "Not in legislation. Not in votes. In data. Control enough of it, and you own reality." His voice dropped on that last word. "Reality." I felt a chill crawl up my spine, but I smiled. "Then I guess you're a god." "I'm working on it," he said, dead serious. We ate dinner on the rooftop patio, under a sky so clear it didn't feel real. The chef served lamb, roasted figs, and wild rice. I barely tasted any of it. I was too focused on Mark's cadence, his careful phrasing, the way he never answered a question directly, but always redirected it like a mirror. "Ever think about your legacy?" he asked as we drank a second bottle of wine. "I try not to."
"Why?"
"Because legacy is just a prettier word for ego." He laughed, hard, genuine. "You're dangerous. You have no idea." I let the wine warm me just enough to loosen my limbs, but not my control. When he leaned in, I leaned back. When he looked away, I looked harder. We were in a constant tug of psychological rope, and every move felt like a test. I was passing, until he touched me. Not a grope, not aggressive, just a hand on mine, gentle, slow, calculated. "I want to know you," he said. "Not the version you show." I looked him dead in the eye. "Then earn me." And there it was, the flicker, the crack. His eyes darkened just enough to tell me I'd triggered something. Not rage, not lust, but fascination. He liked women who made him work. He didn't know he was already in my web. Later, in the bedroom, he didn't touch me again. Just watched as I undressed slowly, letting my dress fall with calculated carelessness. I wore silk beneath, black, delicate, dangerous. He said nothing, just sat on the edge of the bed, eyes sharp, mouth tight. "You trust me?" he asked quietly. "No," I said. "But I'm curious." "Good," he said. "Curiosity is honest." He pulled back the sheets. I slipped in, back turned to him. He didn't move for a long time. When he finally slid in beside me, I felt the heat of him, but no contact. Just breath. Just silence. Just the weight of two liars pretending to sleep in the same bed. But I didn't sleep. Neither did he. And somewhere in the dark, I realized something that made my skin prickle. I wasn't in the cage. I was the fucking bait. And Mark, he was the lion who didn't know he was already bleeding. Chapter 6, The Art of Becoming. I didn't sleep that night. Not because I was scared. Fear is for people who don't have a plan. I didn't sleep because I couldn't shut off the noise in my head. Every breath Mark took beside me was a ticking clock. Every shift of his body under those pristine white sheets was a reminder that I wasn't just infiltrating a man's bedroom. I was standing on the edge of a digital empire built on lies, and I had exactly one chance to burn it down. I lay there with my back to him, eyes wide open, heart slow but steady. My body still. My mind screaming. Who the fuck was this man, really? I already knew what the dossier said. I knew about the three sexual misconduct cases, the NDAs, the fake charity under his wife's name, the offshore accounts. I knew the kind of sociopath that smiled for interviews and threatened lives in boardrooms. But lying next to him, I could feel it, the way his mind worked like a machine beneath that calm surface. The way power oozed from his silence, not his voice. Mark wasn't dangerous because he was rich. He was dangerous because he was disciplined, controlled, and he saw people as tools, not threats. That's why I was going to win. Because he'd never suspect the tool was already working against him. By morning, he was up before me. I heard him moving in the bathroom, brushing his teeth, humming softly, like the previous night hadn't been soaked in power plays and invisible daggers. When he returned, fully dressed in a crisp white dress shirt and navy slacks, he leaned down and brushed my shoulder lightly with two fingers. "Coffee's on the terrace," he said. "Stay as long as you want." And just like that, he was gone. I sat up slowly, sheets still wrapped around me like armor. My body was buzzing, not from sex because we didn't fuck. We didn't even kiss again. But from the tension, the invisible strings tightening around my limbs. I had to keep reminding myself this was part of the job. Get in. Get intel. Get out. But the lines were starting to blur. Not emotionally, hell no. I wasn't catching feelings. That shit died in me years ago. But strategically, Mark was making it harder than I expected. He wasn't just another predator in a suit. He was a fucking blueprint. And to destroy a blueprint, you have to become it first. I dressed in the bathroom, no cameras, but I still kept my expression blank. One-way mirrors were a thing in this world, and I never underestimated the paranoia of men like Mark. I checked my clutch. The micro-recorder was intact. No interference. I had 5 hours of crystal-clear audio of him talking about his data dominance philosophy, how privacy was dead, how control is the new currency. Gold. But I needed more. I needed proof of illegal operations. Of transactions. Codes. Access points. Something I Dolan could sink their teeth into. I joined him for coffee that morning, barefoot, calm, eyes half-lidded in fake vulnerability. He was already typing on his phone, sipping espresso like a priest in a tech cathedral. His compound was buzzing quietly, staff moving like ghosts, never speaking, never looking at me for more than a second. "Sleep well," he asked. Eventually, he looked at me, then passed me. "Good. I want you sharp." "For what?" A small smirk. "You'll see." And just like that, I was pulled deeper. We took a drive that afternoon. Not in his Tesla or the Mercedes. No, he had a blacked-out Maybach waiting. He liked to escalate slowly, show layers like a magician revealing tricks one glove at a time. He didn't tell me where we were going. He just poured bourbon into two travel glasses, handed me one, and said, "Trust me." I didn't, but I played the part. The drive was long, 45 minutes through winding roads, past old farmlands and industrial zones. We finally pulled into an abandoned warehouse complex surrounded by chain-link fences and dead grass. The kind of place that had secrets buried under every rusted floor panel. "What is this?" I asked. "Our lab," he said simply. My stomach dropped. He led me inside like we were walking into a gallery. The interior was pristine, completely remodeled, high-tech as fuck. Desks lined with dual monitor setups. Surveillance feeds. Climate-controlled server rooms behind biometric locks. This wasn't just a lab. This was a black site. I counted four workers. All male. All silent. One of them glanced at me with recognition. Or was it warning? Mark walked me straight to a glass-walled room overlooking the main floor. "This is where we simulate data breaches. Run experiments. Create noise and then profit from the panic." He poured another drink and slid me a chair. "You're not just here for fun, Elise." "I don't do fun. I do purpose." I took the glass. "So what's my purpose?" He smiled, slow and deadly. "Infiltration. You make people feel safe. Seen. Wanted. That's rare. You could do things here, real things." I blinked. "You want to hire me?" "I want to own you," he said bluntly. "Not your body. Not your heart. Just the way your mind works." Jesus fucking Christ. He was trying to recruit me. I laughed, cool and effortless. "And what would I be doing for you? Seducing enemies? Stealing trade secrets?" "Yes," he said. "And more." He didn't elaborate. He didn't have to. That night, back at the compound, I locked myself in the guest suite and sent a coded message to Eidolon through the burner laptop embedded inside my makeup case. The keys clicked under trembling fingers. I typed everything. "Target attempting to recruit. Has off-grid facility. Incriminating data exists. Surveillance confirms multiple staff working under illegal conditions. Black site confirmed. Uploading sample audio now. Awaiting phase 2. I hit send. The reply came faster than expected. "Continue infiltration. Next objective. Gain access to encrypted vault server. File labeled KRS-42. Extract and deliver. Do not engage physically. Psychological destabilization recommended. You're almost there." I stared at the screen for a long time, then slammed the laptop shut. Almost there. But I didn't feel triumphant. I felt haunted. Mark was the perfect storm of intellect, ego, and detachment. He didn't get angry. He got interested. He didn't punish, he investigated. And I knew, deep in my gut, if he ever figured out what I was really doing, I wouldn't get a second chance to fix it. I'd vanish. Not just from his world, but from the world. The next morning, Mark handed me a key. "Your suite's yours indefinitely," he said. "Come and go as you please. I trust you." He kissed my cheek before leaving for a business trip. Said he'd be gone for 48 hours. The compound would be mostly empty. Skeleton staff only. His words, not mine. And just like that, the door opened. 48 hours alone. 48 hours to get into that vault. To find file KRS-42. To complete the trial. To end Mark Vero's empire before he pulled me in too deep. I stood in the hallway, key in hand, heart pounding like war drums in my chest. I wasn't just infiltrating anymore. I was committing. Becoming. Becoming the monster he thought he saw. Becoming the woman Eidolon needed. And if I pulled this off, he'd never see me coming. Chapter 7. Collapse me gently. 48 hours. That was the window. 48 hours to break into the encrypted server, locate the KRS-42 file, extract it, and vanish before Mark Vero returned. 48 hours to dismantle a man worshipped by the tech elite. A man who thought he could twist minds like code, own bodies like software, and rewrite truth itself with a smile and a handshake. 48 hours to commit the final betrayal. And the only way to pull it off was by becoming the version of me I swore I'd never be again. Cold. Focused. unforgiving, not the seductress, not the manipulator, but the goddamn executioner. The moment Mark's private jet disappeared from the runway feed I'd hacked into, I slipped into the skin I'd been preparing for weeks. I wore black, tight, athletic, untraceable. I tied my hair up, no makeup, no earrings, no perfume. Nothing to leave behind. No identity. No softness. Just intent. The compound was quiet. The main staff gone. Two security guards left behind. One upstairs, always stationed outside the master suite. The other rotated around the perimeter. I waited until midnight. Routine changeover. Then I moved. I crept through the east wing hallway like smoke. I knew the layout by heart, every room, every shadow. I'd memorized guard patterns by watching reflections in the floor tiles, overheard shifts during dinner conversations. I didn't just learn Mark's empire. I absorbed it. The vault room was behind a nondescript door in his study, masked behind a false wall of books. I'd brushed my fingers along that wall more than once, pretending to admire the spines while mapping the weak points. Tonight, I pressed the hidden sensor in the lower left corner. Click. The shelf retracted. And there it was. A solid metal door with biometric scanner and retinal ID pad. Military grade. Useless against anyone but Mark. Unless you had something he didn't expect. I pulled out the lens scanner I'd hidden inside a cosmetic compact, lifted from his eye drops during his sleep. Scanned. Spoofed. Access granted. Next, the fingerprint. I'd collected that 2 nights ago from the rim of his bourbon glass. Final step, a vocal confirmation. I pulled out my burner phone, tapped the pre-recorded clip, Mark's voice from dinner. Reality is control. The door clicked open with a heavy sigh, like the house itself didn't want me in. I stepped into the server room, swallowed by cold air and the low hum of machines breathing in binary. The space glowed blue, floor-to-ceiling racks blinking with encrypted secrets. My heartbeat synchronized with their rhythm. I approached the main console. Typed in the alias, Sage King. Password field opened. That's when it hit me. He would have chosen something arrogant. Something sentimental wrapped in dominance. I typed. I am the system. Denied. I tried. She wants to obey. Access granted. Of course. The man was always monologuing his pathology. Inside the drive, I located the KRS-42 file. But it wasn't just a file. It was a dump folder. Video footage. Audio tapes. Screenshots. Names. Birthdays. Bank account numbers. Blackmail archives stretching back years. Politicians, CEOs, influencers. All marked and categorized. People who had no idea their sins were already purchased and packaged for destruction. He didn't just manipulate men and women. Mark Vero owned society's strings, and he liked to tug them one at a time. I selected everything. Compressed the folder. Plugged in my extraction drive. As the data transferred, I leaned against the wall, watching years of rot spill into my hands. I should have felt victorious. But all I felt was filthy. This wasn't justice. It was war. And the body count wasn't measured in lives lost, but reputations gutted. As the final file transferred, a notification blinked on the console. Remote access request. Mark Viero at sagenet.core. Shit. He was logging in. He knew. I yanked the drive, killed the console, and bolted. I moved fast, barefoot, heart pounding. My exit route was prepped, garage tunnel through the wine cellar. I reached for the panel and started to punch in the code. Behind me, the lights flickered. And I heard it. His voice. Going somewhere, Elise? Fuck. I turned slowly. Mark stood in the doorway. No security. No backup. Just him. Pale blue shirt unbuttoned at the top, sleeves rolled, eyes colder than I'd ever seen. You came back early, I said, trying to steady my voice. You broke into my house, he said. Calm. Almost amused. Stole from me. I did worse than that, I whispered. Oh, I know. He stepped closer. You betrayed me. You thought this was love. No, he said. I thought this was respect. That made me laugh. It was bitter, harsh. You don't earn respect, Mark. You extract it. Like data. You squeeze it out of people until they forget they ever had a choice. He exhaled slowly. I offered you power. Purpose. Belonging. And I took it, I said. But only long enough to gut it. We stood there, frozen in silence, enemies in disguise, hearts pounding under perfect stillness. Then he moved. Quick. Too quick. He reached for my wrist, twisted hard, but I spun out, slammed my elbow into his ribs. He grunted, stepped back. I reached for the knife in my boot, just as he kicked it from my hand. We grappled, bodies colliding against the wall, the floor, the edge of a glass table that shattered on impact. He pinned me, breath hot, eyes burning. "You think they'll protect you?" he snarled. "I think they already are." I smiled. Then he heard it, the faint buzz in the wall. The silent alarm I'd triggered the moment I entered the server room. A direct line to Eidolon's dark grid. They were watching, recording, tracking. He froze. Realized. Too late. 10 minutes later, headlights lit up the compound. 3 unmarked SUVs. Silencers. No questions. Eidolon moved like liquid shadow. Professional. Untraceable. Mark was taken, no cuffs. Just pressure. Silent detainment. Legal black hole. By the time I stepped out under the moonlight, they were already scrubbing the scene, wiping footage, ghosting the servers. The man who claimed to own reality was reduced to a whisper. And me. I stood there, wind against my skin, heart still rattling in my ribs. One of the agents, faceless behind mirrored glasses, approached. "You completed the trial," he said. "Was that what this was?" He nodded, handed me a card. "Level 2 initiated. Expect contact." I stared at the words etched in silver. No name. No title. Just purpose. I left the compound alone, walking barefoot down the winding driveway, shoes in hand, blood on my knee, glass in my hair. But I felt cleaner than I had in years. I didn't need revenge. I didn't need clout. I needed this. This was more than manipulation. This was rebirth. Mark Vero had spent years turning women into pawns, building an empire off secrets and shame. But in the end, it wasn't his algorithms that destroyed him. It was the one thing he never saw coming. A woman who knew how to fake a confession, and meant every fucking word of it.